Welcome to, am I on the air? Yeah. And welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, November the 5th, 2010. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Joanne Chang,
Hello.
Our guest co-host, Carissa Thorpe,
Hello.
And our guest technician, Amanda Chalmers, who is running the controls today. On today's show, we have a couple of guests to engage with us for our first interview. Brian Vincent and Annette Parks of Stop UBC Animal Research will be here today to tell us about the latest activities of their campaign to bring awareness of the animal research being done at the University of British Columbia here in Vancouver and to ultimately put an end to it. One of their most recent media tactics was a nearly naked demo that they held in downtown Vancouver in conjunction with the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and we'll be hearing about that as well as UBC's response to the campaign itself. For our feature interview today, we have a very special young person on the show to speak with us, and that is Whitney Hillman, who we actually talked about previously on the show last week. Her story was big in the news a couple of weeks ago and is still gaining lots of media attention far and wide. Whitney is the 16-year-old budding activist who is a student at Concordia High School in Concordia, Kansas, and she decided that the baby chick that she had to raise from birth as a class project was not going to meet the same fate as the 44 other students' chickens who were also participants in this killing assignment. So in fact, she went against school rules and rescued her chicken on slaughter day, saving her pet so that he can live out the rest of his natural life in happiness. I was so moved by this story when I first read about it last week. I was just in awe of Whitney's bravery and tenacity to do what she did. It's just unbelievable. And in our talk with her today, I think our listeners will also be in awe at the story Whitney has to tell about her experience and the words of wisdom she has to share, coming from someone of such a young age who, remarkably, had never done anything like this before. So before we move on, I'd like to shift gears for a few minutes and chat about a local issue that has come to my attention this week. So Chris and Joanne, Christmas time is coming, and I'm wondering if there's anyone on your gift-giving list who is difficult to shop for. You ever have that problem?
Yes.
Okay. So you might be wondering what you can give them this year. For the person who has everything, Vancouver Magazine has an original suggestion. In this publication's holiday gift-giving guide, they call the Annual Essential Guide to Giving the Perfect Gift, they have a piggy bank featured in their guide. But it's not just any old piggy bank. It's a piggy bank made out of a real dead pig. What do you think of that?
I've seen the pictures. It's very disturbing. I mean, it's a piglet. It's not just a pig. It's a baby piglet. Mm-hmm. So it's on sale for, what, $4,000?
Yeah. Yeah. The price of, I guess, a baby pig, that's what it runs for. So I think it's personally disgusting and appalling to showcase the life and death of this innocent, beautiful creature that never even got a chance to live past being a baby and is now reduced to being a container for pennies. Maybe it's especially appalling to me because I just happen to think that piglets are some of the most adorable and beautiful creatures on this planet, and it's just insulting to see the poor animal's carcass being belittled in this way. I look at this pig and I see Babe from the movie, mm-hmm. or one of my past...
Even younger.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
Or, a couple of days old.
Yeah, or I think of one of my past pet animals, mm-hmm. right? Like, how would you feel if your beloved companion animal's body was used in this manner? I think it's the same thing, you know? I think it's just really demeaning of the body, and mm-hmm. it's just another way to use an animal's dead body. It's quite disgusting.
Well, what if it was babies, like human babies that died young, well, and we just turned them into, like,
right.
That would never happen.
Right. I don't think it's any different.
Yeah.
It's taxidermy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they say that the pig hasn't, like, they haven't killed the pig. It's died from natural causes.
And well, how do they know that?
I guess
where they're sourcing them from.
I guess you could, I don't know, how would they kill it and not ruin the body, though?
Right, I mean, they're
natural causes. Yeah. They just passed away in their sleep, I guess.
Maybe they poison them, I don't know.
Yeah, most people don't know where they source their
yeah.
things from. Like, furriers don't know where their fur comes from. I would think it would be the same
yeah.
thing with piglets.
Yeah, to me, that's even besides the point. I mean, look at
yeah.
this pig, and it's just, it's appalling. You can find out more information about this piglet bank on the website where it originally comes from, which is thecheeky.com. That's cheeky, C-H-E-E. K-Y. And it says that it's a real piglet that has been taxidermied and inserted with what piglets probably dream of as babies, a coin storage unit and a cork plug.
No.
Disgusting.
I dream to be stuffed with coins.
Yeah, and then they say, make your plush overpriced apartment complete with this little guy. Ew. And, of course, it's $4,000. Just wonderful price to pay. The Vancouver Humane Society is calling this a particularly callous and demeaning exploitation of a baby animal's dead body. And they have put out an action alert advising people who think this is wrong to contact Vancouver Magazine to let them know so. Letters to the editor can be sent to mail@vancouvermagazine.com, or they can be telephoned at 604-877-7732. This contact info plus more is also available on our website at animalvoices.org on the November 5th post. So please take action if you care. And I know I'm definitely going to be contacting them.
Well, next week, if we have time, we'll probably try to call them on the air, see what they have to say.
That's
for
a good
themselves.
Idea. Do that next week. Yeah. Excellent. So with that said, Carissa, you have our events for this week.
Yes. November is Adopt a Senior Animal Month. A senior animal is generally considered by shelters to be age 7 years and older, and these are animals who have the hardest time finding forever homes. Most of them will finish their days in the shelter. The misconception is that an older dog or cat will die soon or be boring, but the truth of the matter is that these animals have so much life and love left to give and share. They are usually already housebroken, often once knew the love of a person or family, and frequently come from with foreknowledge about their behavior, preferences, and suitability, and are often calmer and don't usually need as much stimulation as a puppy or kitten. Since you have the opportunity to know so much about the animal you are adopting, there is also a greater chance of the match being forever and less likelihood of the animal ever seeing the inside of a shelter again, which is what everyone wants. If you're looking to grow your family in a furry way, why not consider adopting a senior dog or cat this month? You can check with your local animal shelter or browse some of the animals awaiting permanent placements on the BCSPCA website or at petfinder.org.
I think that's a great idea to adopt older pets, and I don't know why more people don't do it. I don't know why older pets are deemed to be unadoptable, because as you said, they're already trained, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
And you know, people get sick of their pets after a few years anyway.
Well, that's what I was thinking. The people that dump their pets at the shelters after a couple of years, that's where they should be getting their pets from. Get an old dog that's going to die soon, and at least, you know, the dog will be adopted at least, and hopefully have a decent life for his or her last couple years.
Not as big of a commitment, like if you're planning to travel in the future
I think
or something, because that happens a lot,
there needs to be more PR about this issue, so thank you for giving us that PR.
Tonight, Friday, November 5th at 10 p.m., CBC TV will be airing a documentary entitled Pet Farm, as in pharmaceuticals. The documentary examines the latest trend within the pet industry, the use of psychoactive drugs on cats and dogs. Big Pharma has identified a multi-billion dollar market yet to be tapped and promptly released a string of designer drugs said to treat everything from aggression to anxiety to obesity and even doggy Alzheimer's, with more drugs to follow. Is the popularity of these drugs point to heightened compassion or further evidence of an overindulgent society? Pet Farm is directed by Patrick Reed and produced by Peter Raymond, the same pair behind the award-winning Shake Hands with the Devil. On Sunday, November 7th at 6:30 p.m. stop, UBC Animal Research is hosting a vegan potluck / clothing swap / games night at Jenny Brook and Anna's house. Please bring a vegan dish to share. Gluten-free and or raw is most inclusive, along with your own plate, cup, cutlery, and appetite. And don't forget to bring your clothing to trade if you're planning on taking part in the clothing swap. Noshing will start around 6:30 p.m. with the clothing swap around 7:30, followed by animal research trivia games before 9 p.m. All the information regarding location and directions can be found on Facebook under Stop UBC Animal Research or posted on the Animal Voices Facebook page. Coming up on Saturday, November 20th, Liberation BC will once again be hosting a screening of Earthlings, the unsurpassed animal exploitation documentary narrated by Joaquin Phoenix. When Liberation BC last screened the film in January, there were 150 people in attendance, with about half of those being meat eaters. The impact of the screening included a high school teacher who went vegan and began talking about animal rights with his students, a quiet longtime vegetarian who became an outspoken vegan, and a meat eater who decided to gradually reduce his meat consumption and learn about vegetarian cooking. The screening takes place in the Alma Van Dusen room on the lower level of the Central Library. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. and the film Lolita, Slave to Entertainment, about the life of 37-year-old performing killer whale Lolita, will shed light on the multi-billion dollar aquarium industry, followed by Earthlings at 2:15 p.m. Bring a friend and spread the word to family and friends and strangers through Facebook, email, and by putting up posters in your school, workplace, or community center. More information and a link to print off posters can be found on Liberation BC's Facebook page.
And if you have any other events that you want to send to us, what do we do, Chris?
Sorry. You can post them on our Facebook page. Just search Animal Voices Vancouver. Or you can email them to us at
radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Thanks a lot. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM CFRO, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We are joined here today by two of the key members of Stop UVC Animal Research, which is a community-based campaign that employs peaceful and compassionate approaches to educate the public about the grim realities of research on animals at the University of British Columbia and to ultimately bring about an end to research on animals at UBC. We first heard about this campaign in a feature interview we did with a member of the organization when it first broke to the media in September. And we have Brian Vincent and Annette Parks here today to give us an update on what has been happening since then. Hello, Annette and Brian, and welcome to this week's Animal Voices radio show.
Thanks for having me.
Hi.
Hey. A lot has happened with the campaign since the last time we had you on the show about 2 months ago. Can you give us a brief update on some of the tactics that you have carried out in your campaign to create awareness on the topic of animal research at UBC since you went public to the media at the beginning of this September?
Annette, would you like to talk about the demo we just did?
Yeah, and what have you been doing even just since September? It's been a long time since we've talked to you.
Okay, well, I can give a brief update and then Annette can talk about the demo. We have done a number of things, including filed numerous Freedom of Information Act requests to get details from UBC. Two of those Freedom of Information Act requests were denied by UBC, and the rest they've not responded with any materials. We've done a lot of media. We've been featured in the Vancouver Sun, the Province, numerous radio shows, international and national news wires. Had a fundraiser that was highly successful, and of course, our most recent demo. Also, we had a coalition letter signed by more than 60 organizations from around Europe, Canada, and the United States calling on UBC to disclose information about its research.
That's a lot that you've been up to, and I know you had a big demo that happened just over a week ago. So, Annette, I think you were the organizer of this demo, so can you tell us what happened in downtown Vancouver outside of the Art Gallery on October the 25th?
Well, we set up like a mock laboratory with the animals, which were body-painted activists. There was a bunny, a mouse, and a monkey, and I was the cat. And then we had other activists dressed up as researchers who were kind of like pretending to experiment on us and posing for photos for the media. And then we also had other protesters holding signs and passing out literature.
So what would you say was the purpose of this demo downtown? Now, I know you've been using all different kinds of tactics to reach the public and reach the media. Would you say this was just another way to raise awareness in that perhaps your other tactics wouldn't convey?
Yes.
And what media was there to cover it?
We had the Vancouver Sun, the Province, CBC, City TV, Global, and the UBC student newspaper also covered it. Mm-hmm. And I believe a French station covered it, the event as well.
Yeah, and there's definitely been lots of pictures on the internet that I've seen. So do you think that the demo did attain the desired goal? And what has been the outcome, like feedback that you've been getting, for example, that you've experienced since the demo as a result of it?
I think it was a major success because we didn't expect so much media attention. Most of the news coverage that I saw has been pretty neutral, but some of the coverage in the UBC student newspaper has been negative. There was one article that was like bashing us for having naked chicks in a cage, but they didn't really capture what the event was about.
So why did you choose to use this method of creating awareness for the campaign? It is rather controversial, you know, to have naked people out there. It's very PETA-like to display naked activists for the sake of raising attention to the issues.
Well, I will stress that we weren't going for sexy. There was a male activist body painted at the event, and there were no thongs, no high heels, and we were out in the freezing weather cowering on operating tables and cages. And we were mostly going, we were trying to show our dedication to the cause by going out in such cold weather.
Yeah, not only that, but I saw some video footage of the demo where it was literally pouring rain. So that was very brave of you and the other activists to be out there like that, freezing. What do you have to say to the naysayers of tactics like this who deem it inappropriate to exhibit live nudity in public?
Well, we were fully coated in several layers of paint, and the girls wearing pasties and full-on underwear, and it is fully legal to do so in Vancouver, so personally, I don't really see a problem with it.
I have to say the body painting was quite beautiful as well. It was really well done.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't even really look naked. So what, you know, it's the human body.
Yeah.
So do you believe that the approach of using many different types of methods to gain the attention of many different types of people is just the way to go when launching a campaign that you want to have the mainstream masses and just everyone take notice of? I ask this because it definitely seems like the approach that you've been using just with all the different ways that you've been reaching out to the public.
Yeah, because we want to reach as many people as possible and keep applying pressure on UBC so they'll release information. So we want to do as much as we can to get our message out there.
Mm-hmm. So this campaign is to raise awareness of what's happening at UBC, and it's been getting tons of media attention, as we've been saying, which is probably the key to most successful campaigns, and it's only been 2 months. Can you talk to us about what UBC's response to your campaign has been like to the public? What have they been typically saying to the media, and are they giving any answers to your questions of them?
Well, I like to chime in here. I should have mentioned we also did a number of actions on campus, including distributing literature to over 1,000 students in about 15 minutes through a pretty innovative tactic, and then we also went to a town hall meeting that the university sponsored where we had a silent protest. So the university has responded in kind of a typical way. They're using the standard research facility playbook by trying to demonize our organization. As you mentioned early on, we are compassionate. We employ compassionate, peaceful, and legal approaches. And even though everything we've done is completely legitimate and within our rights as Canadians, the university has attempted to demonize us as if we're extremists. And so most recently, just last week, the university sent out a broadcast email to every student, every faculty member, every employee of the university, basically trying to paint us as dangerous, potentially dangerous. Very, very hysterical kind of email to whip up a frenzy and fear on campus. In addition, they dragged their feet on responding to our Freedom of Information Act request. We still don't have any information from them, despite 6 Freedom of Information Act requests filed. And they've been incredibly uncooperative. We've asked for a meeting with the president. The president has never responded to that request. We've asked for a tour of the Animal Care Center, where some of the animals are warehoused. And we've asked for an opportunity to observe some of the experiments. Those requests were denied.
You know, Brian, I'm quite shocked by their reaction because so far, I mean, that's all you've been asking is for them to come clean with what they're doing. And what their reaction is, instead of giving you the truth of what's been happening, they just attack you for using tactics that you're actually not using.
Well, I mean, that's what's so surprising, that a university that promotes critical thinking, openness, debate. They want their students to be, you know, able to look at a lot of different viewpoints, is trying to shut down public discussion about animal research on campus. And then that's exactly what they're doing by trying to paint us as an extremist group, even though, remember, our membership's made up of engineers, architects, social workers, teachers, high school students, even UBC faculty are part of our organization. We've gotten emails from people within UBC. I got one just this morning saying they were mortified by this email that went out by the university.
Yeah, and you know what mortifies me is that UBC has been making comparison between your organization and the Animal Liberation Front, which uses destructive tactics to liberate animals. For example, there were some cases of destruction of property claimed to be done by ALF in North Vancouver a few weeks ago, and UBC drew attention to this in response to your campaign. And, you know, not only that, but they're saying that they've removed all large rocks from outside of the psychology building so that protesters can't, throw them into the windows? Like, I don't know what they're trying to get at there, but how do you feel about that?
Well, again, I mean, all of our approaches are peaceful, mm-hmm. compassionate, legitimate, legal. And this is very standard practice by research facilities. They don't want the public to focus on the fact that UBC is pouring saline solution down into the lungs of 1 to 2 day old piglets, or cutting open the backs of cats and putting titanium screws into their backs and implants into their heads, or administering electroconvulsive shock to primates, exposing mice, cigarette smoke. They don't want the public to focus on that, mm-hmm. so now they're trying to shift the focus away from that to, ooh, look how frightening this organization is, even though everything we've done is completely legal.
Right. Then they've actually launched a new website as of recently. It's animalresearch.ubc.ca, and it blatantly depicts images of a senior citizen and a smiling little girl with the words improving health, preventing disease, and saving lives on it. And it doesn't have too much else on the site, actually, because they're obviously not willing to divulge what's really going on behind the scenes. These words and images, it's hard for humanity to ignore and disagree with smiling little girls and senior citizens and improving health, right? But I really do find that, you know, they might be trying to whitewash the campaign and, as you say, divert the actual what is actually the focus to other issues. So what are your future plans with this campaign?
Well, I'll let Annette chime in too, but we have this potluck coming up. We'll be having a general meeting probably on November 20th. That's tentatively scheduled. And we'll be discussing next steps for the campaign. Again, everything we do is legal, but of course, you know, we work as a group and we come up with ideas together, some of which are quite creative, like Annette's idea. And the others, they're a little bit more mundane, like sending Freedom of Information Act requests. So it's quite diverse, and we haven't really decided what our next steps are.
And at this time, what are some actions that people listening to this show can take in support of this Stop UBC Animal Research campaign, or just to find out more about what you're doing?
Well, they can contact us at 604-551-3324 or stopubcanimalresearch@gmail.com. Or they can visit our website at stopubcanimalresearch.org, where we have an action alert about what people can do.
Are you taking volunteers to additional volunteers to help out with the campaign?
Always.
Oh, that's great to hear. Thank you, Brian and Annette, for coming on the show today to give us this update on your work. To find out more about Stop UBC Animal Research and their ongoing campaign, please visit their website at stopubcanimalresearch.org. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And in the news today, Peaceful Prairie Sanctuary bus ad campaign that we told you about last week has been extended through December. The campaign features interior and exterior ads with a close-up shot of a female cow and the caption, "Milk comes from a grieving mother," followed by the web address for goveganow.com. Peaceful Prairie is both a sanctuary for farmed animals as well as an advocacy group encouraging people to go vegan for the sake of animals everywhere. You can find out more as well as download or order literature from their website, www.peacefulprairie.org.
I want to say I was thrilled to hear just on my email yesterday, actually, that it's been extended, and I've asked the organizers for more information. How did they get it extended?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, did they have to pay? Was the PR company sympathetic to the cause and just said,
I don't think
yeah.
they had to pay.
Well, they had to pay originally.
Right, but not for the extension.
Oh, is that how it works?
Fact?
Yeah, that's wonderful, you know, that it's getting so much media attention there because, you know, bus ads are the media as well, and people see that as well.
So. Yeah. Veg News is reporting that on October 12th, Suffolk County, New York, unanimously passed a law that created America's first animal abuser registry. The registry is to be administered by the county's Society for the Protection of Cruelty to Animals and will require animal abusers to register with the site and provide up-to-date information of their address along with a current picture and other identifiable details for 5 years after their offense. The required fees from the abusers will support the registry financially, and failing to register can result in a fine up to $1,000 and up to a year in prison. While Suffolk County is the first government entity to pass such an ordinance, the concept is a part of a bigger movement headed and championed by the Animal League Defense Fund and their current campaign entitled Expose Animal Abusers. In the late 90s, Megan's Laws were enacted in states across the country, establishing registries for sex offenders. Stephen Otto, Director of Legislative Affairs with the ADLF, took notice and understood that the same system and benefits could be applied to animal abusers. In 2001, Otto drafted model legislation to enact an animal abuser registry. Colorado was the first state to test the bill in 2002, followed by Rhode Island in 2003 and Tennessee in 2008 and 2009, though for various reasons, a registry has never been enacted until this year. Having a registry helps to ensure the well-being of animals and people alike. Owing to the strong connection between those who abuse animals and those who commit other types of violent crimes in our communities, having these people on a registry will hopefully reduce the chances of them harming new victims, whether they're animals or people, said Otto.
That's an interesting tactic. Now, where did you say this is happening again?
It is in Suffolk County, New York.
New York, and it's just in one county. I wonder who exactly is spearheaded this initiative, because it's something that I've never thought of before.
Yeah,
but it
that's
makes
what
sense.
I was thinking.
You know, they have offender lists for child offenders.
Yeah, and so often we report on things that, like, people reoffending. Like last week, that was in the news, the people who had so many animals taken away from mm-hmm. them and were reoffending and are still awaiting trial on their first offense. And now are being charged again.
And like violent criminals that hurt humans start with animals.
Yeah, they practice on animals, right?
Yeah, so it makes a lot of sense to have that.
Yeah. PETA2.com reports that in July 2009, after reviewing evidence that ill, lethargic, neglected, and unsocialized dogs were subjected to crowded, filthy conditions at a puppy mill called Magic Pets Heddens Kennels, a Montague County judge ordered owners Carol and Cloyce Heddens to surrender nearly 500 animals to the Humane Society of North Texas. Now, more than a year later, criminal charges have still not been filed, and reports suggest that the Heddens may be back in business. According to an HSNT report, the nearly 500 dogs were examined by a veterinarian who said she found something wrong with every one of the dogs. The report also stated an elderly Chihuahua suffering from a broken lower jaw broke the hearts of rescue workers as they watched him eat bits of kibble by carefully manipulating the angle of his head to soften it with saliva before swallowing. Aww. One small elderly male poodle, his fur so matted and eyes so encrusted he had become virtually blind, was found and coaxed to safety by rescuers in a field of weeds, which was also hiding a nest of venomous copperhead snakes. You can help by taking action today and speaking up for these animals and countless other victims of puppy mills by calling Montague County Attorney Ronald G. Walker at 940-894-2261 and asking him to please file criminal charges against the Heddens, or by going online to PETA2.com and sending him an email through the Take Charge section of their website.
And you're listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Thanks for the news. Mm-hmm. Today, I'm so pleased to have a heroine for the animals and an activist in the making on the show today, 16-year-old Whitney Hillman from Concordia, Kansas. You may already be aware of who Whitney is, as her endearing and inspiring story made headlines in the media a couple of weeks ago. Whitney is the Kansas teen who stood up for herself and said no to slaughtering and eating her pet chicken named Chicklet, who she had raised from birth as a class project in her high school animal science and food production class. And she will be sharing her inspirational story with us today.
For coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Whitney. We're so excited to have you on.
I'm excited to be here.
So please tell us first about this class project. Why did you decide to take an animal science and food production class? And at which point were you made aware of this class project that would involve raising a baby broiler chick to 5 or 6 weeks old and then having to slaughter it?
Well, the project itself was to raise baby broiler chicks that were only a couple days old until they were old enough to be slaughtered. Our jobs were to feed and water them every day, to clean their cages and weigh them once a week. At the end of about 5 or 6 weeks, our jobs were to go from carrying them to killing them. I originally signed up for the class thinking it was an animal science class. I was not aware at first that it was a livestock and poultry productions class. When I found out it was a livestock and poultry reductions class, I decided to stay in the class because I assumed it would still be really beneficial to myself. Right. I didn't realize it meant we would have to, you know, raise and slaughter the animals.
So you've been quoted as saying that multiple times you told your teacher that you wouldn't kill your chick. And then he said to you that once the feathers come in, it won't be so cute, and then you wouldn't mind slaughtering the chick. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. He actually came up to me at one point and he asked me if I still thought it was cute, and the chicken was, you know, half bald. But I told him that I thought my chicken was still gorgeous, and he just kind of laughed away and walked away laughing, and he disagreed. But I guess that's a point of view on his own, but I thought my chicken was beautiful.
Now, I understand that you particularly take issue with the fact that you weren't told beforehand that the class would involve this chicken raising project and that there should have been a permission slip made mandatory to take the class, just like there is at your school for watching R-rated movies in history class. Can you tell us why you feel this way?
Well, in history classes and any class that involves, you know, blood, gore, or violence, we are told to bring this permission slip home and have our parents sign it that says, yeah, it's okay, I don't mind if they watch this. But isn't there blood, gore, and violence involved in slaughtering an animal? And you'd think it'd be even more of an issue considering it's hands-on.
Right. Yeah, totally. So what was it like taking care of your chickens in your class? I'm curious to know what you were taught to do to care for them exactly, and where and how they all lived. It was about 40 chickens in total, is that right?
It was, I think it was around 44 chickens, but yeah, it was almost depressing taking care of them, because you have to sit there and, you know, see them suffer and be squeezed into these cages, and it's just really sad.
You told me before that they only had about 1 square foot each, is that right, in the cages?
Yeah, some cages, I don't even think they had even that much. It was awful. A lot of them didn't grow to the full 4 to 5, 6 pounds that they were supposed to, and I think that was partially due to, you know, not being fed enough, and then also due to the fact that they were squeezed in so tightly.
And what about food? How much food were you giving them?
We were never really told how much food to give them. The only time we ever really had any food advice was towards the end when he told us to starve them that last weekend, which we ran out of food on Thursday evening, so they didn't get fed for 4 days, actually.
Why are you supposed to starve them?
It's something to do with their insides being cleaned out. It makes the slaughtering process easier, I guess.
Right. So after 5 weeks, slaughter day is approaching, and what are the thoughts running through your head at this time?
I really felt just sick and extremely just depressed because I didn't want my chicken to die. I wanted to rescue Chicklet. You know, I loved him. I didn't want anything bad to happen to him.
Right. So what happened on slaughter day? Can you take us through the details of what you did next?
I spent most of my weekend before slaughter day talking to my mom and discussing with her, you know, the different options I had. I could skip school, or I could go to school and just refuse to participate, or I could go to school and steal the chicken and leave. And obviously, I decided that I was going to rescue Chicklet because I knew that all my other options would end in, you know, he would still have to die, and I wasn't okay with that. I could not let somebody that I, or something that I loved, you know, die. And what, you know, I don't care what people think about it. He's, you know, he's my friend. He's my chicken. And so I went into the class on Monday and I had my big purse and my plan was to put the chicken in my purse and then leave with my chicken. But that didn't really work out in my favor because he just kept kicking and flapping, so I couldn't get him to go in the purse. So I ended up taking him under my arm and just running out of the ag building.
Oh. And I heard you had a getaway car waiting for you.
Yep, my stepdad was waiting about a block away for me, and then he came up and we left together, and I took him to a farm.
That's wonderful. And then you got 2 days of suspension from your school. Why exactly? Were you in trouble for stealing Chiclet?
No, actually, the principals, both of them, thought it was actually kind of funny that I stole my chicken and ran. The only reason I really got in trouble was for leaving school grounds without permission.
Right. So what did the other kids in your class think of your act of saving your chicken while none of the rest of them did the same thing?
Originally, everyone kind of thought, you know, wow, that's really cool. I wish I would have done the same thing. I had some people actually say I should have stolen their chicken too.
Right.
But for some reason, that just randomly shifted, and now everybody kind of makes fun of me for it, and they think it's ridiculous now, which I don't understand, because originally everybody thought it was this amazing thing.
So even though you've been getting all this positive media attention, your classmates aren't supportive of what you've done?
No, most of the students in our school don't even realize that it made it past the local newspaper.
You were on NBC News on TV. They should know by now.
I guess they just don't watch the news too much.
So did any of them, as far as you know, also want to save their pets? Actually, you said some of them said you should have taken my chicken too. But why wouldn't, I guess they didn't have the courage to do so?
I had a few friends that I actually asked if they wanted to do it with me because I knew that they didn't want their chickens to die either. And everybody that I talked to about it kind of had that same, I would, and I really want to, but I don't want to get in trouble.
Right.
And I guess it's just more of a courage thing. Nobody really had the courage to stand up for themselves.
Did you find that was sort of the majority of the opinions of your classmates who you spoke to, or were some of them fine with killing their chickens?
Most of the people in the class, actually, I heard a lot of people saying, oh, I don't want to do this, and most of them just kind of had this, I'll get it over with, mindset, but there actually were a couple students, not many, there was like 2 or 3 total, that actually thought this was like really cool and were excited to kill the chickens. Oh. It was really disturbing.
And how do you think this story just exploded so big that, you know, the media got a hold of it? What do you think happened?
Well, we did create a Facebook for Chiclet. And that was partly it. My mom sent it into our local newspaper, and then that, when they put that in the paper, that went online, and then just a lot of different people sending it in to different organizations and papers and things.
So I'm curious, do you think that this whole story, now that it's become nationwide and it's really getting a lot of attention, do you think that what you did in saving your chicken will be setting a precedent for the future of, say, the kids in their class will now feel that they have a choice?
I really hope so. That would be a huge... You know, I can't think of the word. That would be huge to me, because I would love for people to stand up for what they believe in and for the rights of something else and not just doing what everybody else wants them to do. I hope that other students will stand up and go against this because it's a a cruel project that should not be allowed.
Right. I know that your class watched the documentary Food Incorporated, which has a good part of it that shows how food animals are produced. What did you think of this film?
I thought it was extremely disturbing. Most students just kind of ignored it. They didn't really care, but I was watching it and it almost made me cry at some parts, the way that they were treating the animals. They're, especially the chickens, they're just shoved into the big barns with no light and no room to walk around. And it's just, it disturbed me. What really did.
Totally, yeah. Have your views on raising and eating animals changed since you raised Chicklet? I know that you've said, I really wish I hadn't experienced this, but it does open up a whole new world I didn't know about. What do you mean by that?
Well, I am a vegetarian now.
Yay, that's wonderful.
It is, but because, and my main reason is because I know that every time I take a bite of meat, I'm supporting the inhumane treatment of all these other animals. And then the other thing now is, you know, anytime I look at meat or anything, I see chicklet. And, you know, it's a disturbing thing to see when you want to go eat.
Right.
But,
So would you say that this experience has ultimately been beneficial for you because it's opened your eyes to all these different animal issues?
In a weird way, I would, because it's opened up, like, that the whole new world that I was speaking of. It's opened up how animals are treated. You know, you don't really think about that whenever you're going out to eat. You don't think about how the hamburger you're eating was a cow that might have been thrown in alive to be skinned, or a chicken that you're eating might be boiled alive. You don't think about that. And then during this project, it just kind of makes you open your eyes. And I'm a little thankful we did the project, but in the end, I'm really regretful that, you know, all those chickens had to die.
Right. I guess it's something that happens every day, though. You know, chickens on a large scale are the most abused animals on the planet just because of the mass volume of them that are killed every day. So I know what the feedback has been like from your classmates, but what kind of feedback have you been getting from your teachers and your parents? Have they been supportive of your decision, of what you did?
Teachers generally avoid the subject altogether just because it's so controversial. I actually had one of my teachers pull me aside and tell me that he was proud of me for standing up for myself. My family and my parents have been extremely supportive of me. My mom actually helps me run the Chicklet Facebook.
Great.
She does a lot of research on this, and she's been a big help, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you said that Chicklet is now living safe on a farm that's nearby?
He is. It's about an hour and a half away from where I live. It's actually my cousin's farm, so I get to keep a pretty close eye on him. He's living happily. It's free range, and then they put him away at night so that, you know, they're safe. But there's other chickens there, and there's turkeys and other animals, so he's, you know, happy living chicken.
That's great to hear. I just want to remind our listeners, you are listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver. So do you think that what has happened will cause your school to relook at this class project of raising a chick from birth and then killing it? And do you think they will now be open to allowing students to have a right to not participate if they don't want to? I know that the national nonprofit organization United Poultry Concerns is now calling for your school district to put a stop to these types of class projects.
Well, they've not put a stop to them yet. They've actually, my teacher's already discussing starting another project, either doing one with pigs or fish.
Oh, my goodness.
The only difference is that he has made, he's offered to let some students do a movie project instead, going out and doing research of other farms and stuff, but he still hasn't said anything about, you know, permission slips or any of it. His main difference is that instead of us killing the pigs, if we did pigs, it's that he's going to send them off to professionals.
Right.
And either way, you know, we're still raising an animal and watching it die in the end.
Yeah. In response to the story, your school district has said that students needed to learn where food comes from. What do you think of this?
I think it's absolutely ridiculous. There's plenty of, you know, videos and YouTubes and information online that you can watch or read that mentions all of the different things that these animals go through in order for them to become our food. And not to mention, I think we can all look at a piece of meat and know that it comes from an animal. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to know, how were the rest of the chickens in your class slaughtered? I understand that the students in your class had to slaughter the chickens themselves.
From what I heard, because like I said, I didn't attend. I left with my chicken. From what I've heard, it was they started out with wiring the chicken's feet together, and then they would slit their throats. And some of the students actually told me that some other students were missing the vein that they were supposed to cut, and that there were chickens bleeding out for several minutes before they would finally die.
And that's essentially because the kids didn't know what they were doing, right? They're not trained slaughterhouse workers.
Right. You know, and I don't think even our teacher really knew exactly how to do it, because he didn't explain it to the students and how to do it.
So, yeah, continue.
Eventually after that, they cut their heads off, I believe, and then, you know, they were dunked in the scalding water.
Right. So they really did have the experience of how regular chickens are slaughtered, except perhaps without the expertise, that's for sure, having to do it for the very first time yourself. So after you took Chicklet, you wrote a letter to your school officials, which I'm going to read a bit of here. You said, "So yes, I have in fact become attached to Chicklet and could not participate in his death. If you cannot understand my perspective, let me put it in perspective for you. If you have a pet at home that you love dearly, or if you have ever had a pet that you loved, then look at it like this. Someone throws your pet in a cage with four or five others and says in 5 weeks you are to cut off its head, pull off its fur, clean out all the guts, bag and freeze the meat, and take it home for your family to enjoy. What would you do? Would you not do everything in your power to keep a loved one safe? Are pets not loved ones? So please do not judge my actions on the grounds of stupidity and bad behavior, but on the grounds of love and empathy for another living being." Whitney, that is very beautifully said. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask you, why do you think it is that people call some animals pets and other animals food?
Well, I'm not exactly sure why, you know, our society has decided that it's okay for a dog to be our pet and that it should not be treated that way, but it's perfectly fine for us to treat a chicken like it's a rock. I know that, you know, you cannot kill something that you've bonded with.
Right.
We gave Chicklet a Facebook, and our main reason for doing that was because there's a face and a name there with the chicken. And I know personally that there's some people, like my mom especially, who can't eat chicken now because they know Chicklet. And
right.
Once you associate something with love and care, and it has a face and a name, you don't want to eat it. You don't think of it as food, just like we name our dogs and we see our dogs every day. That's what has become.
Right. I'm curious, did the other students in your class end up eating their pet chickens?
You know, I don't really know. I've heard a couple different times as I go back to class, I've heard some students ask the teacher if he ever threw away the meat. I think most of them, whenever they put it in the freezer to freeze overnight before they took it home the next day, I think they just kind of left it there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Nobody really wanted to eat their chicken.
Makes sense. So for all the people listening to this show, and especially for other high school students out there who may also want to stand up for themselves to not harm animals but are too scared to speak up, what do you have to say to them?
Well, to anyone out there who's in a difficult situation where you have to choose between what everyone else is doing or what your heart is telling you to do, I would just hope that everybody would go with their heart. You know, in the end, your heart is never wrong. And sometimes people are. And when you choose the decision that you know in your heart is right, you're almost always put into a better position for yourself and others. And I know that with what I did, I might have lost some friends from my school, but I've gained so many others.
Right.
And I have people tell me every day on Facebook that, you know, they're envious of my strength and courage and that I'm a hero, or that, you know, they're so proud of me for what I've done. And I would just like to let everybody know that, you know, for every two friends you might lose in some situation that somebody else thinks, you know, is stupid, you could potentially gain 100. So
That's literally been true for you.
Oh, yeah. I've gained over 1,000 friends on that Facebook. Yeah. And it's almost magical, you know?
It is, for sure. And I would like to read a quote by Martin Luther King Jr. that you actually posted up on Chicklet's Facebook page, and I think it's so appropriate. The quote is, "Never, never be afraid to do what's right, especially if the well-being of a person or animal is at stake. Society's punishments are small compared to the wounds we inflict on our soul when we look the other way." And I just think that it's just so fitting for the story that you've told us today, Whitney. Thank you so much for coming on the show today to tell us your story of courage and for standing up for what you believe in. And I just want to say that Chicklet is really lucky to have you in his life.
Thank you so much, Whitney.
I feel lucky to have Chicklet in my life, and I thank you for having me on your show.
Now, we are thrilled to hear that you've just gone veg, and we want to help you out in your journey as new vegetarian. So we're going to be sending you a couple of books to help you out. We're sending you A Teen's Guide to Going Vegetarian by Judy Krasmanik, as well as the amazing cookbook and one of my all-time favorites, Vegan with a Vengeance by Issa Chandra Moskovitz, plus another amazing cookbook, especially for newbies like you. It's called The How It All Began 10th Anniversary Edition by Sarah Kramer. And we're also sending you the 2011 Go Vegan Wall Calendar from Sarah Kramer. So those will be going out in the mail for you very soon.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much. Well, that's going to be a huge help.
You really deserve it. And I know from talking to you before, you don't have a lot of probably support in your community for being a vegetarian. So we want to help you out a bit. And I'm going to be sending you a bunch of links as well of just, you know, different kinds of foods and stuff to look out for. So as I said, and as we're talking about, Chicklet has his own Facebook page, which has become very popular. And you can friend him by looking up Chicklet Chicken Hillman on Facebook. Also, please check out our website, animalvoices.org, as the United Poultry Concerns organization is running a campaign where they are asking people to write in to the Concordia School District officials to ask them to permanently eliminate the curriculum of slaughtering animals. And all that contact info is posted there on our website on who to write to. Thanks again, Whitney, and take care.
Thank you. You too.
So that was Whitney Hillman. What did you guys think about that? Just wonderful, isn't it?
She inspiring. She is full of positive energy. I just love that girl and her energy.
Yeah, and you know, Chicklet Chicken Hillman has over 1,800 Facebook friends now. So when I checked, I think yesterday, so he's really gaining a following there. Now, Whitney actually published a poem, which is on her Chicklet's Facebook page recently. I think it was just this week she sent it out to her friends. And I want to read it for you because it's really quite sweet and it really sums up the story well. So here's her poem called Just Like a Chicken. You think I have no purpose. I'm just for food on your plate. I hope this Facebook shows you food was not my intended fate. The world is waking up now. I hope you will wake up too. Yes, I am only one chicken, but you need to wear my shoe. I hope you learn from me now that happy meals and finger licking does not portray the true reality and the cruelty toward the chicken. I don't deserve to die by a child's hands, and my life is not your teaching tool. I deserve to live as a chicken should. This project does not belong in school. I hope to change this indifference, though I know it will not for some. But my death was not a needed event to know where your food comes from. You wanted us to wear for you an objectified head stamp and live within the confines of your concentration camp. When you began to plan this project, did you even give it thought? You know that when you're boiled alive, the water gets really hot. You think that my short lifespan makes a fair for a fair debate. If you knew that I was modified, why did you reenact the hate? So you think that death is a skill that a child needs to know? You used me in your classroom and let the children watch me grow. The weekend prior to slaughter, we would have liked to have been fed, but you were not the hungry one. We were just food, as you've said. I think you could have taught better, perhaps teach something more humane, and I think you only contributed to all of the problems and the pain. I am asking that you learn from me now and read the messages I've read from some. I think it's time to turn the tables on you. Do you know where your food comes from? You say it was all for attention. I hope that makes you feel better, but we are still seeking change and we'll do that letter by letter. You'd like this all to come to a stop. You would like the quiet and the silence, but don't you see, if I did that, I'm only succumbing to the violence. She believes she had no choice. Her only option was to run. So you sacrificed every single chicken but one. So you think I'm just one chicken, one less meal on your plate, but my purpose now is greater, and that a much better fate. My final message is a gift to the world. Please open up your eyes. See the consumerism for what it really is, one giant pack of lies. And that's by Whitney Hillman in the voice of Chicklet.
That is very sweet. Thank you for sharing that with us. And she is so inspirational, even with her transformation. You know, most people, a lot of people, if they've gone through this ordeal, they wouldn't have connected that. And Whitney has gone vegetarian and probably is well on her way to becoming vegan. And she is in Kentucky, where there's nothing.
Kansas.
Kansas. Same thing, right? Where there's nothing to eat. So, you know, she really kind of embodies this idea of the power of one. And here's a quote from Drew McCall Burke. The power of one to change a few, the power of a few to change many, the power of many to change nations always begins with the power of one, you. And Whitney
that really sums up what Whitney is and her story. So I think it really, you know, we're sharing this story so that you can be inspired to make a difference yourself.
And she's really quite alone out there for her to be so strong in her school. Imagine, you know, like the things you're going through as a teenager in school is enough to bring this onto yourself. She is so brave. So please join her Facebook group. Now, I guess next week's show, we actually, I'm still trying to get in touch with the people I want to interview, so it will be a surprise, I guess. But I want to remind our listeners to join us on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver. Follow us on Twitter, Animal Voices YVR. Or if you have any comments or questions regarding the show or any suggestions, we always welcome your email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And you can always check out our website for past shows that you've missed, you want to listen to it again or download onto your iPod at animalvoices.org. And of course you can download us our podcasts on iTunes as well. And before the end of the show, I would like to play the song to end the show, which is called Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens, in honor of Whitney Hillman and Chicklet Chicken Hillman. So that's it for us this week. You've been listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.